Hello, welcome to Spotlight, a ray of arty goodness.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we catch up with the TT's favourite artist, well, my favourite TT artist anyway, Rachel Clegg, and peek into some private lives, courtesy of Noel Coward and Dramatis Personae. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in, planning, hoping to create or would really like to put in the spotlight. This show, poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, sculpted, ceramic, drag, film, mime, etc, etc, etc. Lots of others. Just email me, spotlight@maxradio.com, Howard Kane with an E at maxradio.com. Always delighted to hear from you. And the more you get in contact, the more varied the show will be. So it's just possible you've noticed it's the TT at the moment. There's usually a few telltale clues around when it's taking place. Now, it's not necessarily an event which you would link with artistic endeavours, but one regular attendee for a goodly number of years is artist Rachel Clegg, possibly one of the smiliest artists you'll ever come across. Rachel's been steeped in the TT her whole life, and for at least the last decade or so has taken a stand behind the grandstand to display her work, which frequently features nudes of herself in quirkly TT-themed scenarios and photographs shot around the course itself, along with calendars and prints. She also has several books to her name, and this year has produced her own unique guide to the TT course. I called into her packed stand a day or two back to have a chat and find out more.
So, came here with my dad when my dad was racing, then covered it as a journalist for a number of years, and then I've been doing the arty stuff for 10, 11 years now. So a veteran.
A veteran indeed.
A veteran, yes, yeah.
Well, it's been super busy here today. I almost thought I'd better go again because there have been so many people coming into your tent. Absolutely chocker with punters coming in. Brilliant prints around the outside. We'll have a look at those in a minute. First off, I know a little frustrating because you've done a book which we're promoting for this year, which the actual book itself you're still waiting to come.
Yeah,
but just tell us more.
It's on its way. It's en route. Whatever that means, I don't know, but it's en route. So that should land probably Thursday. So, and that's a little, well, basically I'm obsessed with anything TT related. So I spend all my money on crazy collectible things on eBay. And I did find this beautiful vintage map published in 1962. Of all the different sections of the course. Well, not all of them, but 20 sections. And we played around with the images and I projected them onto me, and I was trying to like echo the shape of Ramsey Hairpin, which is a bit of a challenge, and Sylvie Strait, a bit easier. And with working with these projections of this old map. So, and then I thought, ooh, I'll write a guide, which is more involved than I anticipated, yes.
Started off easy and then you thought, oh my
Lord, what
have I started?
It started off as a straightforward project. And then weeks later, I'm thinking, oh, my word. So, yeah. But it was actually quite enlightening because as part of the book, I interviewed quite a few riders around the paddock and about how they take different sections and what speed they're going at, what gear they're in. And I did actually learn, it was really enlightening, the process of writing the book. Like, I think Peter Hickman makes 187 gear changes in one lap in a senior race. That's a lot of changing gear, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, yeah. That's it. So I find that quite interesting, but maybe I'm just a saddo, I don't know. So yeah, but that the book will be here soon, but the images are really nice, and it's really colourful. It's bright blue and yeah.
And what's it called?
It's called An Unusual Guide to the TT Course. So.
And how did you go about the text then? Because you were saying that was harder. You had this with the images, the thought, but actually sort of doing any text with it?
Yeah, the text was hard because you forget how much information you need to sort of, you know, advising people what road to take, what it's like to spectate at, what facilities there are. All the nitty-gritty stuff actually is more challenging to get hold of than I anticipated. But yeah, but it's there now, it's done. So, and I hope people enjoy it.
Absolutely.
It is, yes.
We've got a digital one just in front of us. Can you scroll down a little bit?
Yeah.
Here we go. So there's the start and finish of it.
I've got some really good quotes off riders. So I spoke to one of the Birchalls the other day about Governor's Bridge, and I got the best quote. He just said, "It's horrible. It smells. It's smelly. It's dark. It's damp." Which I thought was good.
Other than that, it's all right.
Other than that, it's all right, yeah. And then, obviously, like, it was really interesting talking to Jenny Timworth about Sulby. because she was saying that actually, despite being called Sulby Strait, it's actually not straight because of the kinks. And that was interesting talking to Jenny Timoth about that. So it was, yeah, I've learned quite a lot. And interestingly, I've been, this is where I get really geeky. I had another really old book produced by Jeff Duke in the 50s. And he writes his speeds down for various sections. And there are some sections where the speeds haven't changed. Like Ramsey Hairpin, Jeff Duke takes it at pretty much the same speed as they do now. So yeah, I found that quite interesting.
I was thinking that the other day, sort of even through someone like Sulby, you know, the top speeds haven't altered that much.
No, not massively. I think the overall, collectively, we're getting faster and faster. Yeah. But when you look at section times, quarter bridge is another one, pretty much the same. So so it's been interesting. And then we're over the waterworks. I couldn't get into this position here. This is a really wiggly one, by the way, for those on the radio, listening to the radio.
And this is, yeah. So if you're familiar with Rachel's work, she works in the nude format with backgrounds usually around famous racecourses and the TT, of course. And here you're trying to use your body to sort of echo the background image.
I'm pretty wiggly, but not that wiggly.
I think you've done pretty well, really.
Isn't wiggly a lovely word?
I think you're on it there, wiggly. Yeah, yeah. Lots of yoga.
Yeah, so dancing in the kitchen. That's what it is. So yeah, so basically it's a guide using these old vintage images. So that's a whole new batch of work, really. And then then obviously in here in the tent we've got a lot of Hickman stuff because I collaborated with Peter.
Yeah, there's a Hickey theme this year.
It's a Hickey theme. Yeah. We've got it's like having Hickman without his body. So we've got his helmet, his boots, his leathers, his fairing, and then of course we've got the images that relate to Peter. Particularly around the story around the suspension troubles that he had at last year's TT.
We can take a look at that one, actually. It's just around the corner here. So there's a little, we go around the corner here, excuse me, gents, and just around the corner and down here. You know, this looks like, it's fairly impressive, but I try and describe it. You've got the fairing of Hickman's bike all splattered with the flies from last year when it was lovely warm weather. And you are actually, well, you look like you're quite literally suspended by wires.
I am suspended, yeah, because I wanted to go with the suspension theme. So we suspended, it's like an exploded diagram of Peter Hickman's fairing. So we suspended the fairing in the studio, and that we couldn't do this on the course, obviously. But and then I hung from the ceiling in a big industrial studio in Sheffield on climbing rope, which when you're naked, 3 metres up in the air, it was a bit scary.
It looks a bit scary looking at it, to be honest.
And trying to stay still because obviously all the ropes were moving about. So yeah, but we did it in the end. We captured the picture. So and here it is. And
it's a cracking shot, I must admit. Now, how did the Hickey? Do you know Hickey, or how did that link come about?
Oh, it's nice because we're sort of connected in lots of ways. My brother used to race, not on roads, but short circuits. So he was racing at a similar time to Peter, going back now. Peter's dad and my dad raced together at the same time. And then I've interviewed Peter loads of times as a journalist, and then through doing the calendars, he's been really helpful. So through so I know him through lots of different threads, if that makes sense. But that's racing, isn't it? Everyone's sort of connected.
All one big family,
it is,
as they say.
One big family. Yeah. And I think because it is a dynastic thing, it tends to go down generations. And although I'm not a racer, I'm still the daughter of a racer.
Yeah, it's in the blood.
It's in the blood, although I've got no talent on the. I'd just crash without a doubt.
Do you ride?
Yeah, I do ride, but I've only ridden really crazy bikes because I used to do road tests of write-ups about classic bikes. So I've only ever ridden a pre-war aerial or a Sunbeam. So I've only been on these collectible machines that make me really nervous. I've never actually had any time on a normal modern bike. So I haven't been on a non-kickstart bike since I passed my test. So So anyone wants to give me a modern bike to have some saddle time, I'd be very welcome.
So, you'd be forming a queue.
Yeah.
There's another great iconic one. This one's been getting a lot of interest since being here. The one with the lawnmower just going across. Now, was this down by Sulby?
Yes, and we've got the mower over there, actually. I really like the actual mower. So that's probably one of my most popular pieces, actually. I mean, that's nearly, it's got an addition number of 30, and that's been really popular. And the light is just perfect. We did that at 4 in the morning. The light worked really well, and just as we're about to take the shot, some German tourists just sort of stumbled out of the Sulby Glen Hotel. They were obviously getting the morning ferry, and they genuinely just looked shell-shocked because suddenly they were faced with a woman with no clothes on pushing a lawnmower. It's like...
Hello?
It was the face... I wish I'd just captured that look on the faces. It was so good. So, yeah.
And how do you actually come up with the ideas? Because like I said, you've got the suspension there, you've got the lawnmower with the story behind it. I think it's Tim Reeves fixing a throttle cable of the lawnmower.
Tim Reeves, yeah.
I mean, do you just hear these little snippets of information, jot them down and think, you know what, I could make a composition out of that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was your colleague, Charlie Lambert, who helped me with that one, actually. Yeah, it's just asking around. I've got loads of old books about the TT. But then, I mean, look at this week's stories. We've got Dunlop's Visor, Josh Brooks and the Bird, yeah. And, you know, it's happened. This is just the nature of the TT, isn't it? It's so epic, the course, that anything can happen. And we don't know what that anything might be. As long as everyone comes home safe, that's fine. But there's so many stories. But I'm always thinking. So I generally get the story and then I start thinking, okay, how can I represent that? What props can I use? And so.
And then actually getting the shoot, because you say, presumably, you only have a fairly short window and you can actually shoot them.
Yeah, that's the tricky bit is the logistics. And I do find now on the island, it is getting busier and busier. I mean, can everyone just give me a bit of space between cars? Give a bit of warning. So, yeah, the logistics is quite complicated because, like, for example, with the Peter Hickman one, you know, I go to Louth, Peter kindly lends me his fairing, but that's like driving to Louth, get the fairing, bring it back. Then they get that to the island or whatever it might be. It's the organisation of the props, me, photographer, all that stuff is, and I'm not good at organising. So, yeah. But we get there eventually. Yeah, TT style. Yeah, last minute.
Absolutely. Everything's last minute, the TT, isn't it? Yeah. Listen, it's a wonderful tent. It's been, like I said, super busy. You can hear all the people in the background. We could talk forever about loads more of them, but they're all up here for people to see. The prints are there. Hopefully the book will be here as well.
Yes.
They can come and see you. You're here until Sunday?
Yep, here until Sunday. Can I just mention one that I think is quite interesting? Just one more.
Absolutely.
This one, this is the Honda Pledge. I find this really interesting, this story. That's, you know, when Sachiro Honda came to the TT for the first time, I think it was 58, just to have a bit of a recce. He made a pledge to his staff that, you know, we are Honda, we're going to do the TT, we're going to reign superior at the TT. And that is the pledge, the Honda pledge projected. And I don't know, that's such an important piece of TT history because that, I think you could argue that shaped the TT as we know it was sort of shaped by that pledge really. So because obviously Honda is a massive part of the TT. So yeah, I kind of like the history behind that story.
Yeah, it's got a real relevance, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But they're all, yeah, they've all have a relevance one way or another, whether they're quirky, whether it's something a bit more profound like that, whether it's going back to the history or anything and various other race circuits around the world. Terrific stuff. If people can't get here, how do they get in contact with you? Or perhaps they might want, if they don't have a chance to see the book, how can they get one?
They can go on the website, which is www.rachel, which is R-A-C-H-A-E-L, Clegg, C-L-E-G-G.com. Thank you.
Always smiley as ever.
Yeah. It's just to keep the face animated, then they won't see my wrinkles. That's what it is. Keep moving the face around. Yeah.
Always a pleasure to talk to Rachel, who's cornered the market in TT-inspired art, which is artistic, tasteful, but definitely has that biker chick vibe, if that's a thing. That would appeal to lots of the biking fraternity, as well as those of an artistic bent. And of course, she never stops laughing and smiling, it seems to me. Check her work out if you haven't already.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Have you known her long?
About 4 months. We met on a house party in Norfolk.
Very flat, Norfolk.
There's no need to be unpleasant.
That was no reflection on her, unless, of course, she made it flatter.
Your voice takes on an acid quality every time you mention her.
I swear I'll never mention her again.
Good. Now keep off yours.
Thank you.
Not at all. That orchestra seems to have a remarkably small repertoire.
Strange how potent cheap music is. Find you, moonlight behind you, true to the dream I am dreaming. As I draw near you, you smile a little smile. For a little while, we shall stand hand in hand.
From biker art, and the TT to Noel Coward. That's quite a jump, one of the joys of this programme. And if you're a Noel Coward fan, you're in for a rare treat on the island, as the drama group Dramatis Personae are staging a production of Coward's famous work Private Lives next month at the Erin Arts Centre. One of the founders of the organisation and director of the play, Michael Lees, and cast member Sharon Walker, dropped into the Spotlight studio to tell me more.
You always had a sweet voice, Amanda.
Last year was the anniversary, 50 years since he died. So a lot of companies in England were doing it professionally. And I saw one of them, I think you did too. And it was really superb. And I thought, oh, I must try and do this play if I can. And then Sharon came along and she said, well, why not have a go? And, you know, we'll get a sort of few people together. And that's how it happened.
OK, Sharon, so it's you to blame then, is it?
I'm not sure I remember it happening like that, but here we are. But Michael, I think it's fair to say you've been a lifelong fan of Noel Coward, haven't you? So it's a great opportunity to do a fantastic play by such an iconic playwright and to sort of step in the shoes of Gertrude Lawrence, who originated the role I'm playing. It's, as I say, just a fantastic opportunity to do so.
And the play, of course, is Private Lives. Now, who'd like to give us a little précis of what it's about?
Well, when I was reading his life story, this particular play, he wrote it in something like 3.5 days. And I think he was in New York at the time. And then he sent by text, I suppose, or whatever it was in those days, to Gertrude Lawrence. And he said, you're either doing this or you're not, and we might still remain friends. And she replied almost immediately saying, fantastic, of course we're going to do it. Wonderful. So, of course, they were playing opposite each other in the play. And, of course, they were great friends anyway. So they were playing opposite each other. And then there's another couple as well. Now, it all gets a bit complicated because during the play, they've become married and then they become separated and then they become married to the other couple. So it's all a bit complicated. But it's great fun and very, very Noel Cowdish.
It is very Noel Cowdish. You think it still has relevance today, for today's audience?
Oh, very much so, because the humour is fantastic. It really is. It is theatrical humour, but there's so much under the lines. You know, there's so many meanings to it. And he knew exactly what he was doing when he would throw in the occasional line. He knew exactly what he was doing. So in getting away with it in comedy, but in actual fact, getting home a real message that he wanted to get home.
What about you, Sharon? You've done much in the way of Coward before? First time you've done a Coward play? Second, third, fourth?
No, first time for me. I think, though, going back to your point around whether it's still relevant, obviously, there, as Michael mentioned before, there was a rerun of it in West End last year, which was very, very successful with Nigel Havers in.
I did see it. It was wonderful. Very
and funny. You know, that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't something that the audience still wanted to see. So, yes, it's a real classic tale of undying love and mixed marriages and what have you. But all with that very much sort of British stiff upper lip that we all try and maintain. So, yes, great fun. But I've seen a few. I was very lucky to see Present Laughter a couple of years ago with Andrew Scott in, who was amazing. But this is the first time I've actually acted, and the first time in a long time that I've actually acted in anything myself. So very much enjoying it.
It's being presented by Dramatis Personae. We were just chatting about that as we came in, because it's a name that's been around for a while, and I know there are lots of smaller sort of dramatic groups on the island. This is something you started up quite some while back, Michael.
Yes, 1997, when Aylin Cunningham and Mark Clift, who were leading lights certainly in the Drama Federation, and we just decided we'd had enough of the traditional group and we wanted to maybe just have a group that just came together to do a play when one of the group found a play. So that's how we did it. Unfortunately, it's now over 10 years since both of them died, and that was a real loss to the amateur theatre, because they were such great workers in it. But the first play that we did in 1997 was a play called The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer. This was a very controversial play, and it was about, at the time, AIDS was very much the subject that people were talking about and fearful of. And he wrote this play, and it's a brilliant play because it is talking about all the things you need to be aware of and things that you need to know that really could end your life unless you decide to make sure that you live, you know, a more sort of secure life and maybe do things in a different way. And he was an absolute beacon for theatre then, and been very successful. So that was our first play, and we did that at the hotel called the Manon Hotel, and it was really great. We had lots of people in it, that people like Mike Percival and John Wright, and you know, people like that. So you know, we had a good start to that play. Then we entered the One Act Play Festival a few times, with some success at times, and then after the death of Aylin and Mark, it became rather dormant, and there we are.
So here we are, bringing it back to life. A wonderful play. Very, it is very cowardish. It's sort of very sophisticated in many ways. Really acerbic and dry wit at times, I think. And some sort of great text. You've been enjoying the rehearsal process so far then, Sharon? It's been...
Well, I'm acting opposite you, Howard, so
no,
why,
you've
wouldn't
say
I,
yes.
why wouldn't
you've
I
got to
enjoy
say
the
yes,
rehearsal
haven't you?
Process? But it's quite interesting, just to Michael's point around people just coming together to enjoy being in a play. You know, yourself and I and John and Rachel, we've been in lots of things together, and we know as a quartet we enjoy acting together. So it's quite nice just to focus on that and not have to worry about a society and membership and all of that sort of stuff that you usually have to when you're involved in these sorts of things. So I know that there's a sort of saying that the play is the thing, but in this circumstance, absolutely that is the case.
Absolutely. And I think it should appeal to anyone, really. I mean, again, as we mentioned, I saw it in the West End just last year, and I was amazed at how much I laughed and how funny it was, and very much played for the humour. And there's lots of humour in it, albeit at times you might think it sounds a little bit, as I say, acerbic and bordering on rude, perhaps at times, in a very cowardesque
it's
way.
It's just your lines, though, Harry. I think everybody
else is
fine.
Right, Who, What, Where. So it's going to be down at the Erin Arts Centre. It's being staged. Can you give us some dates then, Michael?
It's going to be Thursday the 11th of July, starting at 7:30 at night. And then it'll be the same Friday night and the same Saturday night. But on Saturday afternoon, beginning at 2:30, there'll be a matinee. And the reason that we included that, and we did talk about it, whether it was even necessary, was because not everybody wants to drive at night. The nights will be lighter, obviously, but not everybody still wants to drive at night. So this is an opportunity. If you don't want to drive at night, come in the afternoon.
Wonderful.
Or if you've got a packed social life and
you're
not available in the evening, it gives you something to do on a Saturday afternoon.
Tickets available from the Erin Arts Centre website.
Yep. Yeah.
Anywhere. You're looking very lovely in this damned moonlight, Amanda. Your skin is clear and cool and your eyes are shining. And you're growing lovelier and lovelier every second as I look at you. You don't hold any mystery for me, darling. Do you mind? There isn't a particle of you that I don't know, remember, and want. More than any desire in the world, deep down in my deepest heart, I want you back again. Please.
It's typical coward, bitingly dry, cynical, funny, all at once. The EAC isn't a massive venue, so if you fancy going along, order your tickets soonest. That's about it this week. Don't forget, if you want to hear anything again, go to manxradio.com, download the Spotlight podcast, listen where and when you want. Why not try it whilst humming, "Someday I'll Find You," whilst making a vodka martini? See you next week. Take care, and whatever you're doing, be creative about it. Cheerio.